Welcome back to the Fire Drill. Before we get started about what we talked about, Michael, Alan, and myself, I just want to thank Dormy Workshop and Parpoints, two of the great supporters of Fire Pit Collective and what we're doing and the Fire Drill. Dormy Workshop, artisanal, as I say every week, club covers, putter covers, awesome stuff, been great to us. And then Parpoints, great app. Go download it. Go make par. It's a new way of scoring. It's pretty awesome. So, as always, thank you to them for their great support. This week on the Fire Drill, we talked about the hero. We talked about Casey Martin and whether Tiger would ever take a cart. And we talked about Adrian Meronk. And we talked a lot about Polish golf. We talked about how many players are ranked, whether he's on the team, what he's going to change. Is he going to change a country? And then we went from laughing about that into a very deep conversation about Tiger and what he's been through in his life and what it means to all of us and what he means to the game and what his scandals meant. And some of it is good on the outcome of what it meant to me and Michael and Alan get very deep about whether that should ever have been in the media. It is a really good conversation. I did a lot of listening as much as I can. Sometimes I interrupt and talk about what I want to talk about, but it was really good. Never know where it's going to go. We talked a long time about Tiger and a lot of the things that he's been through. So it was super awesome. That's what I love about this podcast is that you never know where it's going to go. We don't do any preparation outside of a few notes to each other. And it went in a direction that we never thought it would go. So that's it. It's great. It's awesome. That's why I love this podcast. And here's the three of us talking golf.
I got thoughts in my head. Can't get them out. Trying not to think what I'm thinking about. I got thoughts in my head, can't get them out. Trying not to think what I'm thinking about.
Gentlemen, it was going to be a big week. We were all excited to watch Tiger Woods play golf for the first time in ages. He had a WD from the World Challenge. We didn't get to watch the GOAT in action, but we heard him at various press conferences, and he popped up on the telecast, and he was pressing flesh and, you know, being the consummate host. But you know, Michael, what do we make of the state of Tiger Woods this minute?
I don't think we're going to see this guy play a lot of golf in the future. I say with sadness because I know it's very important to a lot of people, myself included, and very important to Tiger. But just to read his body language, to read his body while he's walking, and what he actually says, if you can't walk 72 holes, how are you going to play tournament golf? And how does it get better from here? So sadly, if he could play two or three majors this year, it's a lot. And then the really big question becomes, well, what does he do with the rest of his life to make it meaningful?
Yeah, that's deep. I mean, Ryder Cup captaincies, President's Cup captaincies, you know, hosting more tournaments, being Charlie's caddy. He'll have a role in golf, but it's not the one, as you say, that we would like. I mean, well, let's just talk about the cart situation because, you know, I mean, I kind of, of course, it was vintage Tiger, you know, a little woofing in the press conference. I can hit any shot you want. I just can't walk. I mean, why not just take a cart? John Daly does. Casey Martin did. There's precedent for it. Why is he being so stubborn on this point?
Yeah, I don't get it. I was super bummed. I really like Tiger. I'm a huge Tiger fan. But the Casey Martin thing is a real bummer. I mean, Casey Martin just had his leg amputated. And the fact that he voted against that is just, it's a super drag, man. It really is. I get why he doesn't want to take it, and I understand it. No problem. But I guess it's two separate issues to me, Alan. Is if Tiger doesn't want to take it, I get it. That's his pride. He's a very prideful guy. And you know, it's not a disease or something like that. I just really think that Casey Martin being in that conversation is just not part of what's happening here. Like, Casey Martin doesn't have a leg. Like, the guy legit needs.
Yeah, I mean, he was born with this degenerative condition, and Tiger's wounds are self-inflicted. It's definitely a different scenario. But you could say John Daly's, you know, his lifestyle choices probably 100%. Led to him not being able to walk. And I mean, I guess the question, it's a philosophical thing. I mean, a golf tournament is just they record the golf shots. It's the number of strokes you take. The walking in between, you know, it's central to competition from a fatigue standpoint, I guess, and the wear and tear. I mean, that's part of having to survive the marathon of a tournament week. But walking between shots is not integral to how we keep score. I don't know. I think you can make the argument that if Tiger wants, if he would have a change of heart, I don't think anyone would have any problem with him taking a cart and playing 72 holes and hitting, you know, 276 golf shots. But Michael, I know you as our traditionalist feels differently.
No, it's not even that. It's just, you know, we're all students of Tiger here. It's not about what others would think. It's just really about what Tiger is in Tiger's heart. It's not even, Ryan, it's a great word, pride for sure, but it's even more than that. It's just who Tiger is. I mean, this dovetails exactly with why you could offer Tiger Woods, I would like to think, $1 billion, and he wouldn't go down that live road, because he's someone who looks back a lot, you know, to look back just into the very near past. A golfer he really admired was Jose Maria Lothabaugh. Lothabaugh had a bad toe that put him on the sidelines for well over a year. He missed major championships really when he was in the prime of his game. And he never thought once about asking for a dispensation for a cart. I think, you know, Tiger's models are, you know, in a way, Jones, certainly Hogan, Lothabaugh, Arnold, who was very much opposed to using carts. And I just think it's central to Tiger's personality type that golf is a walking game, period.
Yeah, I respect it, but it's I don't know. I mean, Tiger is a prisoner of his own mythology. You know, he mentioned it this week. Oh, well, Daly took a cart, but I played at the U.S. Open. I won U.S. Open with a broken leg. Like, you know, so I think he's painting himself into a corner here. You just can't go back on that. But
his mythology is who he is. So what you're asking him to do here, I totally understand what you're asking, why you're asking, but what you're asking to do to him, he couldn't actually be true to himself and do it. Somebody else could. You know, I would agree with you, Ryan. Casey Martin, when he was suing the tour for the right to use a cart, just let him use a cart. What's the big deal? I mean, I believe that society, if it can be accommodating, should be accommodating. But that's not a statement on what's in Tiger's heart. So I think it's very interesting that he has no interest in it.
Yeah, I totally respect the fact that Tiger doesn't want to take a cart. Totally. I understand it. I get it. And I understand that that's who Tiger is. I guess I came at it from two completely separate things. Totally understand why Tiger's not taking a cart, and totally bummed that he voted against Casey Martin. And that is what it is. I mean, it's...
If Tiger won out of a cart, I think he'd put an asterisk on his own... On his own victory, so I don't think he would think it's a meaningful win. You know, if you know Sammy Sosa used a cork bat, I mean, it's not the same thing.
I just think I come at it from my own perspective. Like when you know Matt Ginella and myself and a couple others went to Pinehurst, we played 8 rounds in 4 days. We played all the courses there at that point. This is way back when. And we mostly walked, but I think we took a couple carts because we were just chasing daylight and this and that. And at the end of the trip, you just add up the scores and we paid out all the bets, and there was no asterisks on who rode and who walked. And obviously, we're not talking about the U.S. Open, but to the fundamental of the game is hitting the shots, counting the scores. And to me, I personally would not be bothered if Tiger took a cart, and I wouldn't assign an asterisk to what he had done. I mean, you still have to play the shots, and he's already, you know, he's got 1.5 legs, and he's already at a huge disadvantage, and he's got a fused back, and he's got, you know, he's the bionic man. So I don't think there's an asterisk needed, but I do agree, you know, part of what made part of the reason we used to talk about Ben Hogan in 1953 is because he survived the bus accident and he had to sit in an ice bath after every round. And, you know, that's part of it is preparing the body. But it's an interesting conversation to me.
And just to follow up on that thought about Hogan, this is one of the most interesting Hogan quotes ever. And as I get older, I've come to appreciate Hogan more and more. I am the judge of my own standards. It's a famous quote associated with, not associated, it is from Hogan. And that's what Tiger is saying here too. I mean, I guess to Ryan's point, he's not really, because he's saying no to Casey Martin as well. But he is saying to us in his own way, I am the judge of my own standards. So I think there's something very admirable about that.
He's going to use a cart to the father son, which is not really in anyone's mind that different than the Hero World Challenge.
Does Charlie take a cart? Does Charlie ride in the cart?
No, Charlie walked in Tiger Road. I'm saying is the World Challenge that much more of a serious competition than the father son? I mean, to Victor Hovland, yes, but to the world at large, I don't know.
Well, Tiger would definitely say yes. You may not like it, but you get world golf ranking points for the hero. Then you absolutely do not.
You get a lot of points. Actually,
you get a lot of. Just one quick note. I probably have made this point before, but I've had a fantasy, and now it's really going to prove to be a fantasy, that when Tiger turned 50, he would take the three senior majors, the U.S. Open, the Senior British Open, the Senior PGA Championship, seriously, and make it a thing to try to win all three eventually, or win three in 1 year. And I thought he could really elevate those events, which I think are already terrific events. That's not going to happen either.
No. All right, well, you mentioned world ranking points. Let's go there, because I, of course, was rooting for Scottie Scheffler to win the World Challenge, because he would have gone back to number one in the world based on the copious number of points he would have earned by beating 19 guys, most of whom are on vacation, because I root for chaos at all times, and that would have just been delicious.
And you root for the story.
Root for the story. It would have been a great story. I mean, all these LIV guys are, you know, getting pounded because they want world ranking points, and they're just passing them out by the bushel in the Bahamas. It's a little wild, and it doesn't quite jibe with the narrative that's been constructed around all this stuff. But it's good fun.
My tweet was after Victor won, is Victor just won his second straight guys trip. I mean, like. It's a guys trip. It's 20 guys. They all stay in the same resort. They're hanging out. It's the end of the season. No one could give a shit less who really wins. Like, yes, I get it. In the final round, like, there's some pressure. You want to win. I get that. They're competitors. But like on Thursday afternoon, no one cares. No one cares. And the fact that you get world ranking points for an unofficial event, this is not even a PGA Tour event. This is Tiger's guys trip, right? Like, it is a. I mean, listen, I'm not here to defend LIV. Like, literally not here to defend LIV. But it is a slap in the face. If we think that this is not a joke, it's two times. The LIV events are two times the field size, and there are 18 less holes. And we're saying that's not allowed. But this is. It's insane. I mean, it's. It's so ridiculous. The more you look at the official world golf rankings, the more of a joke it's kind of becoming.
Well, and I mean, I've covered Tiger's event a handful of times, and guys are putting a little effort early in the week. And then the first round, anyone who shoots like higher than 71, they're like, I'm out. I tried. I don't have it. And then day two, anyone who's, you know, more than seven back, like basically 20 guys, maybe out of 20, maybe 16 care at the start of the week. After Thursday's round, you're down to about 10. And after Friday's round, there's about 7 or 8. And on Sunday, there's only 4 or 5 guys who care because they have a chance to win. So it's, it is what it is, but
a win at the hero meant so much to Patrick Reed that he brought a 15th club.
Yes. Bada bing choo. Like, I wish I could make a better sound for Michael Zingers, but yes, indeed. well, I mean, for Victor Hovland, it's not a bad win. Like, he's a guy who's still trying to build a resume. I think he's trying to, I was out there walking with him at the old course, and it was a little discouraging to watch him retreat. I mean, in that moment, I mean, this is maybe the best driver of the golf ball on the planet. He kept hitting hybrids off the tee and irons. It's like, Victor, what are you doing, man? he was playing so conservatively. And
did you actually say that to him? Because no, that would be weird.
I said that to myself. I should have. Like, someone needed to say something to him. He didn't look like he was playing to win. It was so strange. So I think for a guy like him, it is meaningful to, when you have a chance to close, you close. That has value to a Victor Hovland.
And you're going to and your status with Tiger is going to be raised. Will go up. And that's a positive.
Oh yeah, these guys live for validation from Tiger. So now he's won it twice, and in future Ryder Cups when they're interacting, like I think you're right. I mean, Victor's going to be like, I've shown this guy what I can do, and there is a weird energy around Tiger that guys have to get used to his presence, and so for Victor, good for him. But
I mean, Vic, listen, again, he beat 20 of the top whatever 30 players in the world. I get it. I mean, he beat 20 guys. He beat 19 guys. Like, it's, I don't know what it validated. 19 and 10 of them are there to like have fun and have a vacation with their spouse. I don't like, again, I just don't.
Do you think Ryan and Alan, do you think Tiger would have a hard time drawing the field he draws if there weren't world ranking points being offered?
100%. That's why they are offered, I would guess. Yeah. I don't know anything about this, but I would guess 100%. That's why they're offered.
I mean, if you look at the history of the World Challenge, initially there weren't ranking points, and he still leaned on his buddies, and they showed up. So I think that he would get most of the same guys just because he's Tiger effing Woods, and they want to kiss the ring. And if these guys have any self-awareness, they know that their third home, their second Ferrari, and most of their net jets is due to Tiger Woods. And so I think it's just showing respect in the way, I mean, even guys who would show up for Byron Nelson's tournament when he was still alive because of Byron Nelson, you saw as soon as he died, that field just cratered, and they don't have the same connection with him. That was, it was just a showing of respect. So I think Tiger would still get a terrific field. You might lose a couple guys, but now that there's world ranking points, it's a no-brainer. And half these dudes have a house in Albany. You know, it just has become a whole, as Ryan suggested, it's just become its own little event that's fun and a little bit of a lark. So
it would have been so cool to hear Tiger say, or say in the future, you know what, 18 man field, no cut. We don't deserve world ranking points. I remember once during a rain delay, once at Augusta, a thunderstorm came in, and Tiger was deep on the course, not that deep, but he might have been on like 15T, and a van came by, and he was playing with Thomas Bjorn, and Bjorn said to Tiger, "Oh, they've got a van for us here," and they were both playing like dogs, and Tiger said, "Do we deserve a ride in from the way we're playing?" And I think they hiked up the hill. But that's just how he is. I think Tiger knows he doesn't, quote, deserve that pip money. It's a joke. And he must know at some level that these points are a joke. But to really put your money where your mouth is and not accept them, that would be maybe a bridge too far, but it would be cool.
Everybody was looking for, what's the FTX's CEO's name? Sam?
Yeah, what? Bankman, Sam? Yeah.
Yeah, Bankman. Rappaport wrote a article about it, that everybody was on the lookout for Sam. And Jimmy Dunn
saw him. Was he in the field?
What's the deal? Or he's hiding out there. He's avoiding prison by hiding out there.
Yeah, no, that it is a world unto itself. Like, one of the power moves in the history of sports journalism was when Wright Thompson was trying to, well, he did write a terrific Tiger story, but he was pursuing him. He actually chartered a boat, and you wouldn't call it a yacht, but a good sized boat to take him from, I guess, South Florida to the World Challenge, just so he could be in that same marina as Tiger and kind of penetrate one of the layers of access and get within the bubble. And he didn't get that much out of it, but I love that we still live in a world where a reporter charters a boat chasing Tiger Woods. so maybe someone from the Financial Times should try that, or Fortune, like that. That's how you do it.
I mean, we all track Tiger's plane, so like everybody's, we're all We're all playing in boat trackers at this point.
I know, it's pathetic. Well, since we're on the topic of Tiger and the live subject has been raised. I mean, it was interesting that he used the exact same words as Rory in his press conference, talking about Greg Norman, who of course runs Live Golf. Greg must go. And it was almost like they workshopped the phrasing together, Tiger and Rory on the back nine at Seminole or something. And it's interesting that we all know that Norman is a bit of a pariah, and he inspires feelings, and he's clearly a thorn in the side of the PGA Tour. But it's very interesting that Tiger and Rory have made it so personal. Because is this about business or is this personal?
Alan, is the presupposition there that you believe it? Do they really think that?
I think it's just posturing. I mean, I think it would be helpful, you know, if they're going to try and, somehow forge a compromise. I think probably Greg and Jay Monahan both should probably exit stage right. You bring in fresh blood. They can say, okay, the new guys can say, hey, all that nastiness, we didn't mean it. We're here to make peace. Like, I don't know if it's mandatory, but it would probably be helpful. But I think it's a reflection of how effective Norman has been, that he's so under their skin and in their heads. Like, if I'm Greg Norman, this is like a feather in my cap. I feel more secure in my job, not less.
I love Norman's response this week from, I think it was Golf Week. I don't know where he said it, but Norman said he doesn't care or think about Tiger Woods and Rory McIlroy. Like, okay, first of all, obviously you do. And second of all, it's just so Greg Norman, right? Like, the little I know of him, just like the public persona of just saying you don't care about Tiger Woods. I mean, the pettiness on every side, from Jay on the down on the tour side and Greg on down on the live side, it is just as my colleague Alan Shipnick would say, a gift from the content gods. I mean, it's ridiculous.
I don't see how, Alan and Ryan, I don't see how that is a genuine statement on either of their parts, Rory's or Tiger's or anybody else who would say it. Because what you have here is an entire threat to your ecosystem and the PGA Tour as we know it. And you've got literally millions of fans, golf fans across the world, who are our lives as fans are sort of hanging in the balance because of this whole thing. And you, two well-known golfers, extremely well-known, fabulous talent golfers, best-known golfers on the planet, are going to put this whole thing on hold because of one guy who doesn't even hit a shot. It's just not believable. I think they must realize that Norman's not going anytime soon and that it gives them time to stall and try to figure out what's next, because the way I see it, Live, the courts will be the courts and they'll have a lot to say here, but Live's got all the cards because it's got all the money. And Jay Monahan said that himself in June. If this is a fight about money, we can't compete because they've got a lot more money than we do. So I don't buy it. I don't think it's a genuine comment on their part. I think it's a clever stall tactic.
Interesting. To me, it sort of diminishes Rory and Tiger to some degree, but Rory's been set up as the conscience of the sport and this noble figurehead. And why is he rolling around in the mud with Greg Norman? Like, I think he should be above that. And it makes him look kind of small. They list him at 5'10". He's already about 5'8", but it makes him look even smaller to me.
Right. Cause if he's going to go down the road of, we're actually going to need to have some kind of compromise here. Greg Norman, no matter what you think of him, he's not evil. You just don't agree with him. So it just, I don't know, makes no sense to me.
Yeah. And meanwhile, Rory's one who has been banging the drum the loudest about, there's got to be a middle ground here. And he thinks that he's trying to facilitate the compromise, but I think he's complicating it because Norman is very tight with the two guys who run the public investment fund who are funding Live. I mean, they are thick as thieves. And I think their allegiances are with Greg. He brought them the idea. He's brought it to life. He's pushed all the right buttons. I mean, of course, he said some dumb things along the way, but I don't think they're bothered about that. And it's been, by any measure, a smashing success. So I think they're committed to Greg Norman. So if if Rory's serious about wanting a compromise, I think this just makes it more complex.
And I got to fact check two things on you. I got to fact check two things on here. At the very beginning, you said that Tiger Woods is the GOAT. Not everybody agrees with that. And there are people who would not agree that this LIV Tour's inaugural year has been a, quote, smashing success.
Okay, that's hyperbolic. But considering that it didn't even exist until March, when you look at the players they've signed, you look at the amount of traction they've gotten in the media, the energy.
Smashing success.
Smashing success. Now, as
it is,
as a competitive offering to fans, I think we can all agree it's a little lacking. But I mean, I think they're light years ahead of where any of us thought they would have been. So.
Yeah, I mean, and they have arguably the best player in the world playing for them. Like, no one thought any of that was possible. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, I don't even think there's
that argument. That is true.
I think if Cam Smith and Rory McIlroy played head-to-head on 10 different kinds of courses and 10 different conditions, I think Cam would beat him 7 out of 10. So,
wow! What?
Yes.
Cam is really good.
He just has a gift for scoring that, you know, Rory, to me, it really comes and goes. Like, if...
And I love Cam. Cam is kind of becoming, like, of all the people, I don't really miss a lot of people that have gone to LIV, but Cam is definitely, not only his play, obviously, but he just seems to be like a down-to-earth kind of dude. Like, they had the videotape, if you guys saw it on Twitter. Michael's not on Twitter, but, like, he's watching a replay of himself in a bar, and he's obviously hammered drunk. And, he's just, like, a good dude, and then... He didn't realize there was a third, another cut at the Australian Open this week. And he's like, they said, why'd you play bad? And he said, yeah, I had too many beers last night. I was hungover. I can just get down with a guy who's just a dude and is really good at golf. Like, yeah, I won last week and I've been partying for a week. So don't know what to tell you.
Yeah, no, I know. It's going to be fun to watch him in the majors next year. As we've talked about before, the imports of majors has gone way up. We're going to bring all these players back together, reunify the game 4 times a week, and the friction and the energy around the majors is going to be spectacular. And I mean, Cam's tailor-made for Augusta National. Any firm, fiery, open course on either side of the ocean. Like LA Country Club is not a traditional US Open course. It's not tight like that. I mean, there's room to play. The green complexes are amazing. Like, it's going to be Pinehurstian in that it's going to be a lot of finesse and a lot of scoring. And, like, I'm not suggesting Cam Smith's going to win the first 2 legs of Grand Slam, but he's dangerous. Oh, wait, no, the PGA is before the US Open now. Anyway, whatever. The point is, Cam Smith is going to be a keynote player in the majors, and it's just going to add to this whole thing.
And to Ryan's point, where they have these different criteria for how you win the PIP money. They should have something for how unpretentious you are, because they're all so pretentious. Except for Scottie Scheffler, you can't believe it. And Cam Smith would do very well in that category. He'd be the best. They all take themselves so seriously. It's so dull.
Yeah, that's well said. Let's see. Well, thinking about the world of golf at large. It was big news in Poland. Like, Poland's going crazy. They finally won an Australian Open.
Wait.
Ryan, you're the only
Did you call your friends?
What do you think about the new Australian Open champ? Can you tell us anything about this dude other than he's really tall?
I just want to know who you called in Poland to know that they're going crazy.
It's creative license. This is the novelization of what just happened. We're bringing to life what it should feel like. Now, the reality is they're probably not going crazy in Poland, but hopefully one bar they're going crazy.
Yeah, definitely. And no, how is golf in Poland? Like, is that a popular sport in Poland?
It's a short season, man. I mean,
it's a super short. Here's what I learned. Like, I didn't know that people from Poland are called a Pole. Like, I just assumed they were like Polish or Pole. I don't know. I didn't know Polish, but Adrian Mronk is the first Pole. It's weird to say to win on the DP World Tour. He won the Irish Open. He went to East Tennessee State. He played on the Challenge Tour for a long time, and now he's won the Australian Open and ruined many people's Sunday because they wanted to come see their favorite son, Adam Scott, roar to victory, and he got demolished by a 6'6" pole.
Well said. And
perfect.
It's perfect. And not so it's one thing to win a tournament. When you win on courses like Kingston Heath is one of the 20 best courses in the world, and Victoria, they played across two courses. Victoria is absolutely wonderful. That was Peter Thompson's kind of hangout. There's a great statue of him overlooking the course, and Victoria is absolutely wonderful. I'd gladly play there the rest of my life every day. So, you know, when you win on these big time courses, it's significant. I think that this is the guy we're gonna have to take seriously. And, you know, hanging over all of these Seamus Powers and these other guys who are popping up this year is the Ryder Cups, you know, what is it, 9 months away now? Like things are getting serious. So the jockeying for spots on the Ryder Cup has definitely begun on the European team. And, I don't know. We'll have to do a deep dive on golf in Poland at some point.
But he's also playing his way into representing Poland in the Olympics.
I don't think there's a lot of competition, to be fair. I mean, it's great. It's you're going to represent your country in many things. Hold on. I will hold while you guys talk. I'm going to see if there's any other. How many Polish golfers are in the OWGR?
Yeah. Well, so and we don't have to go down the rabbit hole of whether the Olympics are good for golf or not, but. You know, I was in Rio. I was hoping to go to Tokyo, but because of the COVID stuff, it just was going to basically be a prisoner of a tiny hotel room. So I skipped it. But the thing that was cool in Rio was it really meant a lot to these golfers to be there. And it was a kind of recognition that is hard to come by because they're not going crazy in Poland. Nobody even knows this guy won the Australian Open. However, if you're an Olympian, that has meaning, you know, like I'm sure that Poland is strong in a lot of the Winter Olympic sports and, you know, the title Olympian has value in places where golf does not have a strong culture. And so if he does get to the next games and that goes on his resume, and if somehow he has a great week and sneaks that medal out, like that's monumental. That could change the shape of Polish golf forever. So, I mean, we're sort of joking, but like, this is where the Olympics is really cool because in these countries that do not have a rich golfing tradition, everyone knows what the Olympics are and everyone knows what a gold and a silver and a bronze medal mean. And so
witness what did for Rory Sabatini in Slovakian golf.
When we go over to report the Polish golf travel log, we're going to see what exactly it did for for the Slovenian golf scene. But no, I mean, that made that whole thing so much fun. I mean, Rory Sabatini at the Olympics was a gift from the content gods. I mean, I still can't believe that happened. And
who in Slovenia agreed to it? You know, who was like, yeah, that's fine.
It probably took like one totally person okay. to rubber stamp the whole yeah. thing. I don't think it was a big bureaucratic process. They were happy to have him. Unlike, you know, the PGA Tour and Rory's brethren over here. They're like, yes, please. We love you. Come on over.
I can't find the new, just this is total sidebar, but the new OWGR site is as bad as the rankings for the Hero World Challenge. I mean, that site sucks now. It used to be, able to find it by country and I can't find it. So I'm just going to assume that Adrian Mronk is the one of the few Polish pros, I would assume.
Yeah, right now, but who knows what's coming? I mean, this could be like Sayre Pack. He could change golf forever. You just don't know how rich the pipeline is of talent.
What's happening to the Norwegian pipeline?
Oh, with Victor? Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, that's the thing is, and that's another spillover from the Olympics is that. You know, all these nations have funding for their Olympic programs. You know, they take it very seriously. And now that golf is an Olympic sport, I'm sure that all these smaller countries are helping to grow the game, to use our favorite phrase. And so, you know, Victor Hovland is definitely a threat to win a medal at the Olympics. And if that were to happen, that would be a monumental deal. And it's probably, you know, I know our colleague Jordan Perez has wanted to write a big story about all the different federations and how it all works. And I'm going to call her after this podcast because we're raising some interesting points here. Like what's bubbling under the surface? You know, like anecdotally, when the games went to Rio, all the national federations in South America and Latin America started pumping money into golf because they realized, you know, if you want to compete in a team sport, you need so many players. Like to try and win a gold medal or even a bronze medal in basketball, like you need so much talent. But it only takes one guy with a gift to bring home a medal. It's a good investment. If you're trying to match dollars per medals, like golf is a very good investment. You just need one guy to do it. And doesn't need any teammates, doesn't need, you know, that much infrastructure. So I think, you know, we may be onto something here accidentally that there's stuff happening that, you know, beneath the surface and all these smaller countries. And it'll be cool to see how it plays out.
All right. Well, I just found searching on the OWGR for Adrian Meronk and Polish players, but I just found out there's an Albanian pro, one Albanian pro, and he made a cut in a Canadian tour event this year. Who knew?
Yeah.
Sit sidebar.
I mean, that's the thing. I mean, golf is such a meritocracy. If you can keep shooting 66s, you're going to find a way. And so, that's what's cool about it. You really can blaze your own trail.
Adrian Meronk is 56th in the world currently. And I mean, it's going to be in the top 50 after this win easily. I mean, it's just wild. He's really, I mean, East Tennessee State, I read a story about him today. He was kind of discovered by, I can't remember the coach's name, but he's a Ledbetter disciple. And he was on a range looking at a bunch of kids, had no thoughts or didn't even know about Adrian Meronk, and said he saw him at the end of the range and he could just tell by the way he was hitting it that he was different than the other kids, and is still his coach to this day. That was like when he was 15 years old. So went to East Tennessee State and then played on the Challenge Tour, like mediocre for a couple of years, 3 years, and then finally got his card. And here he is waxing Adam Scott at the Aussie Open.
And oh, by the way, did you note who is on Adam Scott's bag these days?
Oh, Stevie.
Stevie's back. Michael, I think you have more of a relationship with Stevie than almost any other writer. It seems like he will actually answer your calls or your emails. Like, how have you established this chemistry?
I don't know, but I'll tell you this. I don't know really where it started. Maybe the here. We at Sports Illustrated, when Al and I were at Sports Illustrated together, we would sometimes help athletes in different sports write first-person pieces. And he wrote a first-person piece about his experiences caddying for Adam. And I interviewed him and wrote it up in his voice. But then he took it really seriously, and he's very bright. And, you know, I think a lot of us had the impression, but probably rightfully so, that he was half a thug based on some of his behavior when he was caddying for Tiger Woods, and he was sort of Tiger's enforcer. But, and it's a very significant but, there's a very thoughtful, intelligent, and really, really golf knowledgeable side about him. I mean, there are, you know, actually, as I'm thinking, there are other things as well. Some of the crude comments he made about Phil Mickelson and various other things. But leaving that aside, he's like everybody else. You know, there's multiple sides to his personality. And by the way, you know, Adam Scott, wouldn't have a crude thug on his back. He just wouldn't.
He's so genteel, Adam.
Yeah. Now, maybe, you know, now, many of us would remember Steve Williams caddying for Adam Scott. Alan, what was that open that Ernie won from the car park? Was that Lytham?
Lytham, yeah. Yeah, when Adam bogeyed the last four holes.
Yeah, you could see Williams was more pissed than Adam Scott, and Adam Scott was plenty annoyed. But anyway, I just think it's very telling that Adam Scott would want Steve Williams back on his bag. And Alan, you made this point the other day. There are two caddies who are actually really significant figures in this game today. Steve Williams and Jim Bones McKay. It's neat. It's interesting. They do it very different ways. But it's just another way for us to enjoy the game, you know, seeing these guys in action.
Well, the ultimate showing of machismo and like hyper masculinity was Stevie at the Masters wearing the white jumpsuit with no shirt underneath and just showing all the chest hair. And like, it was like, it was so old school. I wonder if he'll bring it back. But I always was amazed that the green jackets let him get away with it. But, you know, it was very provocative. And it certainly, you know, it kind of fits with, it's part of why he was a great match for Tiger, because Tiger kind of exuded that energy as well. And Stevie walked fast. He's a big dude, and he always had a scowl. And he was always barking at fans, which admittedly he kind of needed to do. There was always an element of chaos around Tiger, especially in the early years. And, you know, it was a good pairing, you know. Like, I mean, Stevie was in better shape than Tiger. I remember at Kapalua one year, I was just kind of hanging out, and he came huffing and puffing and drenched in sweat. And Butch Harmon was there. This is like, I don't know, Tiger stopped playing that tournament pretty quickly. So this was late 90s or whatever. And Williams, they had some bet whether he could jog the entire back nine up and down, which has incredible hills. If you could, he had to go on the cart path and do the entire back nine. And it was like in 22 minutes or something insane. And he did it, and he won the bet, and like took a Benji off of Butch. And it's like, I mean, that would put any of us in the hospital. But so yeah, there was some sort of chemistry there with him and Tiger that fed the whole thing, I think.
I bet you Steve Williams, in his own way, probably has something he, quote, still wants to prove to himself or to golf or whatever it might be. Because, and Alan, I think we've talked about this moment, and Ryan, I don't think you and I ever have, and I don't think too many people know about it. But the Open in Northern Ireland that Shane Lowry won up at Portrush, Tiger was practicing in the rain. It was insane. And he had his little entourage around him, including Joe LaCava and various others. And Steve Williams, you know, Tiger's practicing. Steve Williams is walking, you know, right from right to left, and he just says hi to everybody, and everybody acknowledges Steve Williams walking by, just in a sort of an appropriate way. And Tiger would not stop and even make eye contact with him, and he had to know that Steve Williams was there. And I think Steve was hurt or pissed or both, and I can understand why, because they did have a lot of good years together. And I think sort of their thing has eased over the years as well, but obviously not completely. And, you know, it would be interesting to know what really actually is motivating Steve Williams to come back at this point.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, he's a very righteous dude, right? That was the breakup with him and Tiger was everyone just assumed everyone around Tiger was in on shuttling women in and out, you know, logistically. You just assume they all knew, they all had to know, they all had to be enablers. And Steve Williams wanted Tiger's camp to put it in one of the public statements that Steve had no knowledge of the situation, and they didn't do it. And Steve Williams was so pissed off about that. That's really why he, like, in some ways just quit on Tiger, because it was this personal betrayal, you know, best man in his wedding. And,
He has said that consistently. I don't have any reason not to believe him. Do you, Alan?
No, I mean, I don't. I have no knowledge of it. When the scale of Tiger's infidelity and you know, you would think that a lot of people had to know, and obviously his buddy Byron Bell was booking plane tickets for Rachel Yucatel and stuff like that. But on the other hand, Tiger was such a mystery to everyone. You never saw him. You never knew where he was staying. Like, it's quite possible that they shook hands at the golf course and they didn't see each other until the next morning. And so, but based on how righteous that Stevie was about it, it has the ring of truth. Because
that's how I feel.
That's how I feel. Yeah,
I'm glad you said what he said, because it's commonly thought. Now, what is it commonly thought? It's commonly thought that Tiger fired Steve Williams. Is that correct? Is that what people typically think?
I don't know. I mean, I think in Haney's book, it's pretty clear, like, that Stevie was the one who initiated it, and
for sure. Because he went to work for Adam Scott while he was still employed by Tiger Woods. He went to work for the enemy, and that was tantamount to quitting.
That was quitting, yeah. But then, they never recovered from the scandal, and that was such a strain.
Right.
I mean, I think...
Right.
I don't think working with Adam Scott wasn't the cause. That was the symptom. But it is an interesting footnote. And it's funny that we're trying to ascertain the motivations of a caddy. On some level, they're just carrying the bag, and they're just there to But
not in this case.
Not in this case. You're right. He has a different station in the game, and so there's another. There's just a layer of intrigue there, and
it's kind of weird, Alan, even to be talking about quote the scandal now, because you know, and Alan, you and I have talked about this for what, getting on 10 years now, but it's so obscene. Our interest in Tiger's sex life. You know, I mean, honestly, I thought it then, and I still think it now. And when you think about this hole it took on Tiger's life, I mean, what right was that of anybody's to be exploring his private life like that? But it really did turn his life upside down. And, you know, and now, you know, here, you know, this is a totally different thing, but that car crash, 2 years ago, it turned Tiger's life upside down. And that's a different scenario altogether. And that's something people never talk about. And I can understand why, because it's so depressing, but
it's dark.
It also it is.
Well, dark. Michael went super serious, but I agree. Tiger and who he's banging is between him and his wife at that time. And I never got it. I never got the apology. He didn't owe me anything. He owed his wife and kids an apology, not me. And I just never got it. And that's why I just don't get Stevie Williams being, I guess he didn't want to be involved for what reason. He had nothing to do. Like, I would never think differently of Stevie Williams if he did or did not know about it. So I don't get that. I never got the whole scandal. Like, is it right? No, of course not. But
maybe the greatest athlete of all time across any sport. And that scandal had a profound effect on his career and his on the golf course performance. So that's where it seeps into the public view, because it completely derailed the greatest golfer who's ever lived. And
I guess that part, I agree with Alan, but I just don't, I like the apology. I
didn't, yeah.
Like, yeah. Yeah. Derailed his career. Okay. And yeah, it was like some weird text messages and all that stuff. Yeah. Is like,
I'm not saying we have a right to know, and the whole thing was way over the top. But you know, when Tiger's out there selling Buicks, and he's got, you know, the kids buckle up in the back seat, and if that's the image you're selling, and then I think what America hates more than anything is a hypocrite. So if you're selling yourself as a family guy and this paragon of golfing gentlemen and all these virtues, and then it comes out that in fact you're something else, that's why. You know, if like Derek Jeter was out on the town every night with a different girl, nobody cared. He was a bachelor. That was part of his brand. But when you're, you know, when you pass yourself off as something that you're not, that's, I think, where people object, and they felt betrayed. And, you know, again, was it Tiger's idea to have that Buick commercial? Like, you know, there's a lot of forces that he probably just got swept up in. And even in the moment when he's filming it, he's probably like, oh, this is kind of weird, but you just go with it.
Alan, I'm glad you made that point, and many did at the time, and many would today. He was selling himself as one thing, and he really was something else, and that put people on edge. I would still go back to what Nicholas said at the time. You know, it's his private life. You know, why should we care? But there's a lot to be said for what you just said.
Yeah, and I mean, the thing is that the reason we're so invested in golfers, it's not because one hits a 7-iron better than the other. It's, I mean, Tiger's whole story, it's, you know, growing up, not being feeling welcome at these private clubs, and Earl jangling the change in his backswing, and the hug at Augusta. Like, it's their private lives and their family lives that frame the whole story. You know, just like, why was the 95 Masters meaningful? It's because, you know, Ben Crenshaw and Harvey Pinnick, and, you know, it's like, we care about athletes as human beings. Like, that's why we're invested in their story. And right or wrong, that's just how it is. You know, I mean, Phil winning the 2010 Masters, well, like, Amy has cancer. Like, that's why everyone was crying. And so when you have the heartwarming stories and you have these great victories and they're defined by the personal lives and the family life, and, you know, the players dine out on that for a long time, but then there's another side to that. When you run astray, and there's the drugs, and there's the girls, and there's all this other stuff, then that's gonna be part of the story too. And so you can't only write about athletes when the warm and fuzzy things, because it's their personal stories that are so compelling.
I mean, looking back on the scandal and all it is, this is very like just a personal feeling. Is it? It made me like Tiger more from the standpoint of we had him on this pedestal as some perfect person, and he's flawed just like all of us. And he seems to be a better father. Maybe he has possibly addiction issues or whatever, but that's all. We know these people. My aunt was an addict. We all know somebody who is an addict. Like, he seems to be a better father. He seems to be a better girlfriend. Do we know that for sure? No, I don't know. It's not my business, but it seems to be that the scandal and the accident and his addiction is he's a flawed dude, and that's okay. We're all flawed. Like, it made me like Tiger more, not the things he did, just that he was flawed. He screwed up and he tried to become a better person, it seems. So I don't know. Like, who he's banging is just not my business.
Yeah. Well, I fully agree with that. But it's interesting. I mean, that was what, 13 years ago now, right? It was just time of year, right? It all went pear-shaped around Thanksgiving and into early December. And, it's one of the great what ifs in sports history. Like, what if Tiger never hit the fire hydrant, you know, and if that stuff had never gone public, and, who knows where he would be. And, you know, the addiction issues that followed, is that related to lingering depression and shame and all these things? Like, who knows? It's a wild turn of events, and we're not psychologists. We just play them on the internet, but it's hard not to wonder how things would have been different.
I hope one day that Tiger writes his true feelings, not because like we deserve to know or what was happening behind the scenes, just like what he felt. Was it depression? Was it, you know, like he was held up to this being a perfect person, and, you know, he was obviously, I'm sure, in some ways ashamed of the things he was doing behind his wife's back and those kind of things. I would just be super interested, but obviously it's never going to happen because he represents so many brands and those kind of things. He's just very, you know, defensive about, not defensive, but he just isn't very open. But I would love to hear about what led up to, you know, the things behind the scenes, just of what he went through, why he felt the things that he did. So, wow, this got heavy.
Well, you may know, Ryan, that Tiger at one point was signed up to write a book with a writer who is like a psychoanalyst, a guy named J.D. Moringer, J.R. Moringer. And it didn't happen, but Moringer wrote Agassi and wrote Phil Knight. And to sign up with Moringer is to say, you know, I'm going to spill the beans to you, and not spill the beans. That's a crass phrase. Just be truthful and examine my life. And in the end, for different reasons, I'm sure, it's either on hold or isn't going to happen.
It's not going to happen. Well, it's fascinating. I mean, it's left to the novelist's imagination to kind of wonder some of these things. I will say there is a novel out there called The Swinger. Two of the guys on this podcast typed it, and it does go into the heart and mind of a cross-cultural golfing icon whose life is torn asunder by a tabloid-fueled sex scandal. So there are some answers in that book, I think, if those are interested. But
it's interesting, Alan, because, you know, we've got a sports editor in that book who says, you know, what kind of job are you guys doing if you just weren't telling us anything about the guy that you were covering, which we weren't. So, I mean, you made a very, very good point, Alan. It's really easy for me to forget that big, broad, major point because they're not politicians. They're not clergymen. They're just professional athletes, but they are sort of duping the public. They are professional salesmen. And just one general thought, if I may, we're probably wrapping up here, but when LIV has brought a lot of emotion to a lot of us in a lot of different ways, and one reason is we don't like to think professional golfers, or maybe I should speak for myself, as grubby, as money hungry, as I want the money. It's not supposed to be like that. Or I don't think it's supposed to be like that, but it turns out it is like that. And personally, I find it disappointing. I shouldn't be surprised at 62, but I am.
There you go. Yeah, well, this is the thing about the Fire Drill podcast. We start in Poland, and we wind up in Tiger's psyche. So you never know.
Just for the record, I want to make it clear that I finally found there's two players on the OWGR from Poland with points. Okay, there's a bunch listed, but none of them have points. So there's two. It's Adrian Maronk and some guy on the Challenge Tour. So he is going to change. He is going to change right. Polish golf forever.
Adrian Maronk, agent of change. I love it. Before we let the listeners go, we should mention that if you've come this far, you seem to enjoy our podcast. And here at the Fire Pit Collective, we have another podcast, Need a Fourth. It's Michael and myself, Jeff Ogilvie. We bring in a different guest every week. They drop on Wednesdays. This week is a guy named Brandel Chambly, very polarizing Golf Channel analyst. And it was, I'll let you, Michael, I don't want to speak for you, but I thought it was a fascinating conversation where we saw a different side of Brandel. He was so thoughtful and you know, on air, he can be confrontational and spicy, but he was just, I think he just enjoyed talking about the golf swing, talking to Jeff and nerding out. And, what were your thoughts about that pod?
I totally agree. It was, you know, the thing that made Brandel is he loves golf and he loves the golf swing. And he went deep, you know, probably in large part because Jeff was there and he and Jeff speak the same language. If you like Michael Murphy, and that was really special, and I'm not comparing Brandel with Michael Murphy, totally different personality types, but it's really an opportunity to hear Brandel, I would say, at his best. It's terrific.
Yeah.
I think that's what makes the show as a listener, may I include, but like, as a listener, that's what makes it the show good. Like Joel Damon's goofy and also like introspective, you know, like funny, and Michael Murphy's like, Mike Murphy's way too deep for me, but like people loved it. And Brandel Chambly is going to be very good. So, I mean, like that's what makes the show is like, you're not going to get, you know, the same person. You're going to get people nerding out and very deep and funny. And I mean, It's great. I'm obviously biased.
Well, thank you, Ryan. So, all right, this was another Sunday Fire Drill. We appreciate the listeners sticking with us here to the bitter end. We do these pretty much every week. The digressions are fun. Definitely didn't think we were going to go in the direction we did with Tiger, but that was fun. I mean, we haven't talked or thought about Tiger in that depth in a while, and he's the defining athlete of our lives and our careers. And we could talk about Tiger forever. And it's always changing. It's always evolving and it's always interesting. So, for Ryan French, who's somewhere in Middle America, Michael Bamberger, who's, we never know where he is.
Undisclosed location.
This is Alan Shipnuck in California. This was the Fire Drill podcast, and we'll be back at it next week. Thanks for listening.
I bet big and I played to win. Made a fortune when my ship came in. I ran the table, never thought I could fall. Then the winter time hit me like a cannonball. And now I can't shake this losing streak. Every road I take is a dead end street. I got thoughts in my head, can't get them out. Trying not to think what I'm thinking about. I got thoughts in my head, can't get them out. Trying not to think what I'm thinking about.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
You ever get that feeling like the concrete jungle's closing in? You crave wide open spaces, the chance to chase your own dinner, or just breathe clean air. Well, listen up. There's a whole world out there waiting, and finding your piece of it just got easier. Head over to land.com. They've got ranches, forests, mountains, you name it. Search by acreage, price, location. They've got it all. No matter what kind of wild dream you're chasing, land.com can help you find the ground to make it a reality. So quit dreaming. Head over to land.com, find your open space, and get out there.